Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to start soon, so please take your seat, get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor or in a chair or sofa. Please sit in some way that enables you to feel upright rather than slumping. And as we get settled, I want to continue our conversation about foundational Buddhist teachings expressed in the Four Noble Truths, the very first things taught by the historic Buddha upon his attainment of enlightenment. And the first noble truth is the unpalatable, yet true, obviously it's a truth. Life is suffering, which means unsatisfying or difficult on good days. On bad days, it's something much more excruciating than that. But even if we're very fortunate and privileged, which I really am, a very fortunate person, I have things that don't work out. Even when things do work out, they change and go away. And there's nothing to hold on to, is what the First Noble Truth is saying. And that creates a sense of uneasiness. And the second noble truth is called the cause of suffering, which basically means pretending the first noble truth is not true, and therefore trying to create permanent things that we think will protect us or make us happy. And I hope you will have endless things that protect you and make you happy, but the truth appears to be they will all arise, abide, and dissolve. And that is uncomfortable. And trying to make yourself comfortable as if that wasn't true is the second noble truth, the cause of suffering. And the third noble truth is the cessation of suffering. It's possible to stop suffering. So how? Stop grasping. Stop pretending the first noble truth isn't true. And then the suffering will be alleviated to at least a very great degree. And then the natural question, the question I had was, well, how do you do that? Because there's all sorts of things I want and really all many sorts of things I do not want. And I also don't want to zone out into some kind of disengaged place where I can't be useful in this world. So if I stop suffering, if I stop wanting things to be better, for example, will I just become blasé and not a source of a solution to the incredible problems we face in the world today? You may be guessing that the answer is no, that will not happen. In fact, it enables us to devote more energy, more clarity, more decisiveness, more skillfulness in the actions that we choose to take to improve our lives and the lives of others. So how do you do that is answered by the fourth noble truth, which is called the Noble Eightfold Path. So the fourth noble truth says, do these eight things and you will stop suffering. So that's at least worth thinking about. And today we're going to talk about the first step on the Noble Eightfold Path, which is called right view. Now, the eight steps are divided into three categories. We love lists here in the Buddhist world, probably because when these teachings were first transmitted, the ability to create written documents was limited, if possible at all. I really don't know. So lists help us to remember things. So the three categories of the Noble Eightfold Path are called, in Sanskrit, I believe, Shila, Samadhi, and Prajna. Shila is often translated as ethical conduct, but it doesn't mean morally upright at all times. It doesn't have anything to do, as far as I can tell, with a moralistic view, as we may have learned in the Judeo-Christian cultures. Rather, ethical conduct relates more to, how do I create harmony? How do I help others? How do I make sure I'm contributing to the positive and not adding to the negative? So you might call those things moral, but here moral and ethical means something more like, how do I do right? How do I act in a way that brings benefit to my world? And then the second, and I'm going to tell you which of the Eightfold Path fits in that category in a second. And the second category is samadhi, which means like meditative absorption. And in this category are the steps on the Noble Eightfold Path that teach us how to bring the meditative view into our daily life. So it's not just something we do on the cushion and then we get up and we're jerks or, you know, whatever, lose our tempers all the time, which of course we all lose our tempers. But how do I bring the mind of meditation into my world? How do I not leave it here? How do I bring it with me so I can bring mindfulness, awareness to the way I live my life? And the third category, prajna, means wisdom. So what is true wisdom? The Noble Eightfold Path answers all of these questions. How do I act right? How do I bring my meditative mind into life for the benefit of all? And what is real wisdom? So although prajna is often listed last, prajna is where we begin. Wisdom is where we begin with the first step on the Noble Eightfold Path. And the second step, right view and right intention, comprise prajna. Shila, or ethical action, is comprised by right speech, right livelihood, and right action. We'll get to those in subsequent weeks. And then samadhi, how do I bring the mind of meditation into my everyday life, is comprised by right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration or absorption. But here we start with prajna, right view, which we're going to talk about, and right intention, which we're going to talk about in the next video. So it all begins with prajna. One could think, it would be understandable to think, well, if I do all these other things, I will become wise. If I have right speech, if I have right action, if I have right effort, that will lead to wisdom. And yeah, it will. But the Eightfold Path says, let's start there. Let's start with wisdom, with right view, with seeing things clearly. And then all the steps that follow, right intention, right speech, right livelihood, and so on, will be rooted in something potent and lasting and meaningful. So what is the right view? Of course, that is a question that we all need to ask ourselves. And in the Buddhist world, you can look at it in one of two ways, or at least I do. One of those ways is the right way, and the other one is what I do, because I'm not enlightened. So I hope that's not a disappointment. On the absolute level, right view means you see the inseparable, interdependent nature of everything all the time, and you act from within a non-dual state of mind. I don't know what that means, but we should all think about that. The deepest wisdom is called being enlightened, which means seeing the truth, which is that we are not separate from each other. And not just seeing that, not just understanding it, not just like diagramming it, but knowing it, living from within that knowing and never departing from that knowing in our words, in our actions, and in our decisions. You know, I aspire to that. Another way to look at right view, and this one I think we can all work on, is to simply try to see things clearly as they arise in your everyday life. So what that means is seeing clearly what is happening now, as opposed to seeing something and then defaulting into our opinions, judgments, criticisms, hopes, and fears, which I'm sure are very intelligent and well thought out and all of that. But they're not the same as what's happening now. What I think about now is not the same as now. Right view is knowing that and inspecting your reactions. And at least for a moment, setting them aside so that you can actually pay attention to what is happening, to what is being said, to what you feel, and not immediately going to this means this or that means that. I mean, that's important. We all have to live our lives with opinions and criticisms and judgments and understandings of meaning. So I'm not saying abandon that. I'm saying recognize that that is different than now. Recognize that what you think about now is not exactly the same as now. I hope that makes sense. One way we can begin to experiment with that is when we see or hear things that are upsetting, which is impossible not to do right now. It's not saying don't be upset. It's not saying don't fight the good fight. It's not saying everything's great, because really everything is not great. It's saying notice your reactions. See if you can separate them from what is happening for a moment, so you can actually listen to what is being said, so you can question what opinions you immediately default to, which may be true, but maybe not. Can you introduce a space between what you hear, what you see, what you feel, and what is? So another way to look at this, as some of you may know, I wrote a book about the Enneagram, Enneagram, and I'm endlessly fascinated with it. It posits 9 ways of being in the world. And I wrote about it from a Buddhist perspective, and I just taught a retreat on Buddhism and the Enneagram. So this is very fresh in my mind. And the Enneagram posits that there are 9 ways of being that result in 9 sort of blinders, 9 lenses through which we see everything. And it's more complex than that. But generally speaking, we see the world through a particular lens, that whether you call it Enneagram or nature or nurture is up to you. But we have a way of looking at things. And we most often see in the circumstances of our lives what we're already programmed to see rather than what is happening right in front of us. So in Enneagram studies, one of the values of knowing which one of these 9 ways belongs to you or that you are is that it enables you to recognize there are 8 other lenses according to this system, and yours is only one. So when people say things that make you happy or make you angry or make you think or make you afraid, whatever it might be, good, those are reasonable reactions to the things in one's life. You can say, well, I'm looking at it one way, but is that what they mean? I'm interpreting what you say as if I said it, what it would mean. Well, what would happen if I stopped doing that and instead looked at what you meant? Well, I think it'd be a different world, if I'm being completely honest. If we could hear people for what they say rather than the meaning that we attribute to what they say, which is not unimportant, but these are not the same things, we would be able to connect more deeply and respect each other more directly, and at least converse and connect with each other as fellow humans. And that would be good. So for right view, seeing things clearly, I offered you a few thoughts on what that might mean. On one level, the absolute level means dwelling in non-duality. I don't know what that means because I can't do it. The other more relative meaning is knowing your own mind, respecting your own mind, appreciating your opinions and views and so forth, but knowing that they are not the only thing that is in the atmosphere when the events of your life transpire. So those are good places to start when considering right view. Now, next video, we're going to talk about what organically arises from right view, because all the steps on the Noble Eightfold Path are connected. They're not sequential necessarily, but they are connected. right intention is the second step. And when you have the right view, the right intention naturally arises. So that's good. So my suggestion until we meet again, or for the rest of your life, as you prefer, think about right view. And as you're able to, in the circumstances of your everyday life, notice your reactions to people, to news, to things that you encounter, and ask yourself, what is the right view here? Am I seeing something apart from my mental projections, or as confirmation of my mental projections? And that's a great place to start. So the best way to develop that capacity, no BS, is what we're fixing to do right now, which is the practice of meditation, where we sit with ourselves as we are and we notice our thoughts passing through. And when we get absorbed in something, oh, I wish I did this, or I'm afraid of that, reasonable things, we let go and come back to the breath. So that letting go is at the root of right view. So how do you do that? Well, we're going to practice it right now. So let's sit. Please establish your posture, which means sit up straight, but not stiff. And as you draw yourself up, connect with your natural beauty and elegance. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. You could feel heavy from the waist down and light from the waist up. Let your belly relax. Let your shoulders soften. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. Breath is natural, in and out through the nose, meaning there's no technique for breathing. Just, you're already doing it before I said that, so just keep doing that. The eyes are open, and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front, up to 6 feet or 1.5 meters or some distance that feels comfortable to you given the distance of your screen. And let the eyes be soft and receptive. Let the brow relax. Let your attention come to rest on the rhythm of the breath, which does not mean to observe the breath, it means to feel the breath. Feel the body breathing in and out. Stay with the breath as best you can, letting your mind really rest, not grip, but be carried by the breath, by just feeling it. Your mind will continue to make thoughts because that's what it does. It's no problem. Most of your thoughts just come and go on their own. You need to do nothing about them, nothing. Because your primary attention is on breath, and thoughts are like the sound of someone talking in the room next door, something happening over there. But right here is the breath. Should you notice that you become absorbed in thought, meaning you spaced out, you forgot about your breath, like totally, only totally. Excellent. Notice that. Label that thinking so you start to discern the difference between thinking and meditating. This is thinking. Good to know. And then just let go of the thought, no matter how important or trivial or beautiful or cruel or boring it is. Just let go and don't leave that step out. There's a gentle kind of release. Bring your attention back to this breath and begin again. And the amount of fresh starts that you are allowed in any given meditation session is infinite. So you can relax, and we'll sit together in silence until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. It's important. Thank you for practicing with me. I appreciate it. And thank you for practicing together, because no matter when you sit, others are definitely sitting with you. And may your practice benefit all beings, especially you. See you next time.